Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Can we be there?
Ah, we are here.
Just think of the time.
You don't have to do that. It is right here. It is right now.
Heart and love so strange. Said you never know.
How you doing, Brandon Ray Stokely?
I feel like a champion.
Woohoo! What's crackety crack? Talk to me.
Because we're champions. great team victory for Stokely and Bye.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. On the golf course yesterday.
It's pretty fun. Had a blast. We played our good buddy Bearcat Jim and Joel Dreesen, local legend, head-to-head. We had to pay them back for what they did to us about 2 weeks ago now, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
It was a hard-fought victory. It was a blast. It was a blast, and it's a
good dudes, man.
Good dudes, fun day. You came up with the shot of the day, 17. We're up one, par three, downhill, water and swamp in front, right, left, nowhere to hit it, and that had to be the best shot you ever hit in your life,
dude. When they make the Champions DVD of what happened,
yes,
I'm gonna be rewinding to that part.
That had to be the best shot. And you said a week ago, you said if you ever make a birdie, you're not coming into work the next day.
That's right.
And you hit that ball to about, I don't know, 10 feet,
yeah,
12 feet,
yeah,
something like that.
It's probably the best shot of my life.
And
with an iron anyway.
And you had chance to make birdie.
Yep. Awesome.
And man, I was hoping you'd make birdie.
I know. I wouldn't be here today.
I know. That's why I was hoping you'd make birdie.
I'd still be out. I would have never came home. I'd still be out.
I would have been with you.
I know you would be.
Yeah, well, that was fun, man. Fun day. Oh, we got to give a shout out to our guy, Nick.
Nick and Paul. Yes.
Nick and Paul. Nick, you know, they were listeners
of the show.
Yeah, they were going through us, and we let them go through. It was just two of them. And so we got to chatting with them, and I said, hey, look, if you hit it inside of my ball, which I hit
a pretty good shot,
and I had about 10, 12 feet on a par three, and I said, we'll give you a shout-out tomorrow. And he stuck it in there. He did a good job. So shout-out to both those guys. Even though the next hole, they really slowed down and had us waiting on the tee box. Oh. Like, come on, guys. Get going over here. What are y'all doing?
I knew you were going to do that.
Had to.
Hey, we are all fired up today. We got the Rockies going to be playing while we're on the air today. A 1 o'clock start.
1 o'clock
Sensatella
start.
And Luke Weaver, 3-0. Sensatella.
1 o'clock start.
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right. So buckle up, partner. Luke Weaver, 0-3 against Antonio Sensatella, 3-0. Opportunity after losing game one of the series to win back-to-back games. A white-knuckle finish. Feels like we've had three or four of these already in 17 games. A white-knuckle finish last night. The Rockies escaped that one after being up 8-2. After being up 8-2, they had five runs. The D-backs here. Talking about five runs, I believe it was in the was it the ninth? And it's just like, oh, my God, how did we get here? How did we get? And then, you know, they hold on 8-7, chance to take the series today. This would be, if they win today, and the experts in the desert have it as a coin flip, all right? Coin flip. 50-50.
And we got an 0-3, you said 0-3 pitcher?
I believe Luke Weaver is 0-3.
Okay.
And Antonio Sensatella is 3-0.
And it's a coin flip.
And it's a coin flip.
I don't get that.
Well, there's more at play here. A Sensatella, you know, has not he's been good, not great, coming off a really good outing, right? Luke Weaver,
Luke Weaver was good last year. Had an under 3 ERA, but
wow.
But this year in 3 starts to begin the season, he's 0-3 with a 12 ERA. Mm. So I don't get it. We'll see. Usually, I mean, they don't just make mistakes like that. So
right.
There's a reason why.
There's a reason. So we'll have our eye on that during the show today. And this would be, if they win, this would be 6 consecutive series wins to start the season. Right now, the Colorado Rockies are 12-5 after last night's win. So you're looking at a 12-5 team, number one, first place in the NL West, with an opportunity to go 13-5. I mean, the Rockies have, you look at their run differential. Gosh, I remember visiting this last year.
Oh,
it was
yes.
just so ugly. In 17 baseball games, the Rockies have outscored their opponents by 28 runs. It's pretty significant and noteworthy. Like, you can be a first-place team like the Marlins happen to be in first place right now in the NL East. They've outscored their opponents by 3 total runs. So it's encouraging.
Yes.
I hope they go out there and put it in their pocket here.
Yeah, great job of holding on last night. You know, I mean, that's the way a baseball season goes. You're going to have games like that where you got a big lead, team comes back, and you just kind of hold your breath, and you hopefully can hold on to these wins.
Yeah.
And they were able to do that. And that's the bottom line. I mean, you can nitpick it and say, gosh, that bullpen now is starting to, like, leak a little bit here. It can be concerning. You know, big question marks. They were playing great early, pitching great early. But as of recently, you know, they've had some tough outings from some different guys.
No doubt.
So you look at who the closer is going to be now. I mean, is it Diaz? Are they going by committee? What's going on there? Because certainly Diaz wasn't good last night. And so...
Shout out to Daniel Bard, by the way.
Yeah.
You talk about a pressure situation. It's the ninth inning. It's now a one-run game. There's runners on first and third with two outs. And he gets out. It was Stephen Voigt. He struck him out. It was Daniel Bard's first save since 2011.
Should he be the closer?
I don't know. You used the word committee
right
a second ago. That's what it's feeling like right now.
Yes. You see, you know, Almonde, he'll be in there. He'll pitch a good eighth, and then Bud will just roll him out there in the ninth. We see Diaz, Estevez. I mean, we saw Bard last night. So I think, you know, until somebody takes it and really solidifies it, it probably will be kind of one of those committee things.
Probably so. And I'm okay with that for right now.
I'd like to see Bard continue to get an opportunity there. Because like you said, we know his struggles and his issues with command and what he dealt with and his time off. But he's got it figured out. And, you know, when you go into those types of situations, how do you respond? And he did what he had to do and got a strikeout.
Yep.
So
yep.
That's all you're looking for in that role. And so I think his issues and problems are behind him. But
I want to see more. You know, I want to see more. He's proving that your statement correct over and over. But I still want to see more. The sample size just is not appropriate enough after taking, 7 years off or whatever it was.
I don't need to see more.
You don't need to see more?
No. I mean, as far as issues being behind him. Now, will he get hit a little bit? Well, yeah, maybe so. But I think his stuff now and what he has shown through 17 games and pitched a lot of innings and last night in pressure situations, that the issues are behind him. Not worried about the issues.
I hope you're right.
But what do you think? How do you think Bud Black should approach it when it comes to closing out games?
Go whoever's pitching well and go week by week, game by game. I'm okay. Unless Wade Davis comes back at a certain point and is, you know, wins the trust back from Bud Black and the team, I'm okay with sort of, you know, riding the hot hand, if you will. I'm okay with that for right now because they're figuring out ways to do it. It hasn't been perfect. Last night's a great example of that, and there's three other recent examples of it as well. But they're finding ways to get wins. I just can't believe this team's 12-5. I mean, what's the equivalent there? 36-15 or whatever? 36-15, something like that.
Yeah.
And the starting pitching, Kyle Freeland, went 7 innings.
Allowed
two runs, 7 hits. He struck out 2, walked 1. Bravo. I mean, you talk about putting issues behind you. Kyle Freeland is passing the eye test. He looks great. I feel great when he's taking the mound after, you know, being designated and everything that he went through a season ago. The starting pitching continues to really, really impress.
It really does. And Nolan's back. Had a home run last night.
Yep.
That was great to see. I mean, Charlie,
dude,
500.
He is unequivocally the hottest player in Major League Baseball right now. It's not even close. It's not even close. He goes 3-for-4 yesterday. He had a monster double in the eighth inning that ended up being a 6-run eighth inning for the Rockies. This is a guy who started the year 0-for-9 at the plate. He is currently riding a 15-game hitting streak.
Wow.
Stokey's 34-for-68 through 17 games. He has 6 consecutive. That means in a row.
That means, consecutive means? In a row. Thank you for
six
clarifying that.
6 consecutive multi-hit games. 6 consecutive. That ties his career high dating back to 2017 where he won the batting title. So we're seeing this guy just freaking be a ball of flame going up to the plate. It feels like he's going to hit a double or just knock it somewhere
where
the players aren't standing every single time he comes to a plate.
It does, and it's fun to watch. And it's when you're in that type of zone, like he's in right now, I mean, to be hitting 500 through 17 games is just remarkable.
It's insane.
So it's awesome to watch. And you look at the other guys around him, Nolan picking it up now. Daniel Murphy's been great. Tapia last night, 3 for 4. Let's go. You know, I love that. Get him going a little bit. Looks like Hampson, leadoff hitter. That might be his spot.
Yeah, maybe so.
So, you know, trying to figure this line out up a little bit. It's not perfect. McMahon, I don't know if he's going for the strikeout record or what here, but, man, holy
he's
cow.
He's hard to watch, man.
Hey,
he's hard to watch.
Now.
He's Let's hard to watch.
But bat
right
on
now.
Ball. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah. It's,
you look at a guy who's scuffling like that. Just it's painful to watch. And then you watch Charlie look like he's playing slow pitch softball. And just the dynamics at play there, super interesting. You mentioned Nolan. He now has 4 RBIs in the last 2 games, in the 2 games after bouncing back up off the bench when he was sat down on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. And how about Tapia had 3 hits, including a 2-run double in the 8th.
Yeah.
So he's getting it going a little bit.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's exciting. Sorry, Stoke.
Yeah.
I heard okay. I heard Spilly after the game on Monday. So the same numbers aren't going to apply. I heard Spilly say Charlie can go 0-36. Again, this is after Monday night, not last night's game. He said Charlie can go 0-36 and still be hitting .310.
What?
He said he can go 9-36 and still be hitting .400.
Have you ever double checked Spilly's math?
No.
Okay. Because I got to double check your math all the time. I don't know if, you know, how Spilly math is.
Here's more math for you.
It's probably better than yours.
Probably.
He's probably right.
Probably. Charlie, did I ever tell you about the time I walked out of the math placement test at RPI?
What's RPI?
RPI is like one of the best polytechnical schools in the country. Matt Patricia, the coach of the Lions, went to RPI. He was a nautical
pencil guy. Yeah.
You got to have a huge brain to be to go to RPI.
Uh-huh.
Starting salary for a graduating senior is like $70,000.
So
they're recruiting the heck out of me. They're recruiting the heck out of me.
They used to do what?
To play basketball.
Oh.
And they used to...
I knew it wasn't anything to do with school, so that's why I was wondering.
They created, like, fake articles. They wrote, like, fake press releases with me being, like, a star for the engineers or whatever. So I go on campus. I do my visit. I go to take my math placement test. Literally didn't know how to answer. Ooh. Like, this is just where to place me.
Right.
Like, what math tier should we place Zach in? Should he choose to come here? And I...
There's not one lower.
And I felt so bad because they brought up, a moderator or the person that sits and watches the test to make sure you're on the up and up. It was just me taking the test, so they hired this person to come. It's just me and them in the summer, and I go to take the test, and I look at it, and it doesn't take me long to figure out that, like, I'm not going to be able
to
answer any of these. And I apologize. I said, I'm so sorry. I can't even take this test. And I left.
That school's not for me.
That school's not for me.
You realize that really quickly.
It's so hard that the dean's list, it's not 3.5. You just have to be a 3.0 to be on the dean's list at RPI. But here's more math for you. That's why we went there. Charlie Blackman is hitting 500 through 17 games. Assuming he stays on a 4 at-bat game pace, he needs to hit .360 the rest of the way to hit .400. And he'd be the first player since Ted Williams to do so. Now, whether, you know, what regard you hold that in a shortened season, we can have that conversation a little bit later.
It's not the same, obviously.
Definitely not.
Right, but still, that would be cool. That would be really cool. But certainly, you can't put that up there with, you know, in the record books as hitting .400 in a season.
No.
It's just because it's...
It'll be its own record.
Yeah.
It'll be, if he continues to do it.
It'd be a great accomplishment regardless of how many games, but you can't stack that up against, you know, Ted Williams.
Right. Agreed. We are just a couple hours away from the Avalanche taking the ice in the NHL playoffs to lock horns with the Coyotes. And I am so fired up. The blackout stuff has been waived. Everyone's going to be able to watch. And our Avalanche insider, Adrian Dater, joins us courtesy of Bud Light. Adrian, first of all, thanks for stopping by. Super fired up to see the Avs this afternoon. Do me a favor here. This is just where I want to start. A lot of fans have not been able to watch the Avalanche as closely this season as we all would have wanted. if fans are being reintroduced to this hockey team at the start of the NHL playoffs, what do they need to know before 3:30 this afternoon?
Well, let's see. they've got a guy named Nathan MacKinnon, who's one of the best players in the league. They've got a great young, possibly the best young defenseman in the league already, in Cale Makar. And they've got a bunch of other good guys, too. Gabe Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, Nazem Kadri, Andrei Burakovsky, Jonas Donskoy, JT Compher. There's a lot of good young players they have. They have a very good young team that could do some real damage here in the NHL playoffs. That catches basically up to speed, I think.
And Adrian, when I look at this team, when I look at, you know, some of the stars that you just mentioned, the Nathan MacKinnons, you know, Mikko Rantanen, Gabe Landeskog, those are legitimate NHL stars. But you talk about the depth of this team, the Cale Makars, the Samuel Girard, the depth that's been added to this team. You just said the name Kadri, and you can look at Donskoy. And then you look at the goaltenders as well. You got a pair of really good goaltenders. Where's the weakness on this team?
Well, I think most people would look toward goaltending. And just, it's not calling a weakness. There's still a little bit, sort of a jury still out kind of thing on that. No goaltender on this team has won a Stanley Cup before. Of course, nobody's been with the Avalanche for a long time has won a Stanley Cup. They do have a couple guys who have won cups that are transfers from other teams. But, you know, the goaltending is something that people still worry about a little bit. Philip Grubauer is a guy who hasn't had a brilliant season, but he's probably going to be your starter today. So I think that's somebody, you know, you talk to hockey, quote-unquote, experts, and they'll usually say, well, the goaltending, we still don't know about that. So, but it's... They were both in the top, the top 10 that year, I think, in saves percentage and goals against. So, you know, that's pretty good. At least, Philip Grubauer may not have been in the top 10 in one of those categories. I may be wrong. But Pavel Francouz, the backup, was, and he's there in case Grubauer falters. A lot of people want to see him play. Of course, it's the old, you know, the backup quarterback is better than the starting quarterback. Him in, that kind of same thing. You know, it's the same thing in hockey. Weaknesses. They're still really young, so a little bit of untested thing there. You know, can they do it? Can they get over the hump kind of thing? That might be a weakness. I've been a little noticing that I think that the team is still, I don't know if it 100% believes in itself just yet. I think they think they can win it, but I don't know if they know they can win it. And if that makes any sense, maybe that's something they just have to do trial by. You know, they have to go through it. They have to do it just like any team has to do it. Until you do that, it's sure. Still kind of a you could consider that a weakness.
Adrian Dator joining us here. When you look at the series, how do you think it shakes out?
Well, I think the Avs are going to win. I predicted in five. So, you know, hopefully I'm not going to jinx them by doing that. But the Avalanche I think on paper, they stack up better against the Coyotes than potentially other opponents they could have drawn in the first round. The Coyotes are a scrappy underdog. You know, they're going to try and play with fewer resources and try to steal games with their goalie, who is very good, Darcy Kuemper. They do have a couple of stars that are offensive stars, but one of them's kind of fading. Phil Kessel is a guy who won a couple Stanley Cups with Pittsburgh, but seems to have had a little bit of a tougher year with Arizona. They have a guy named Taylor Hall, who was a good player, won the Hart Trophy as most valuable player like two or three years ago.
Yep.
Probably Nathan MacKinnon should have won that trophy. So, Avs in five, I think, unless, you know, I mean, you know, injuries can always be a factor if MacKinnon goes down or something, that alters things. But I think the Avalanche beat this team. I think they want it pretty bad. I think they know they can go far in the playoffs, and I just don't see the Coyotes stopping them.
Well, I hope you're right. Adrian Dater, looking forward to hearing all your coverage throughout these NHL playoffs, and hopefully it's a long run for the Avalanche. Obviously, keeping our fingers crossed, they're one of the favorites to compete for the Stanley Cup and even win the Stanley Cup. So hopefully we're hearing an awful lot of you here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Thanks for stopping by.
Well, so I'll be up here in Edmonton at the game. Only one of two U.S. media here, I believe. So I'll be have real eyeballs on the game itself. So I'll check out my site. We'll get the best coverage we can.
Awesome. Love to hear it. Appreciate you, man.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. There he goes. Adrian Dater, our Avs insider, courtesy of Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Colorado Avalanche. You can see Adrian's work at Colorado Hockey Now. And look, the Avs are supposed to win this. This is something that they're supposed to get done. But look, when we talk about NHL playoff series, what's the one thing that can equalize an unbalanced matchup? That's the goaltender.
Yep.
Right? We heard about that for years. We know it to be
true. Hot goalie,
right? Standing on his head for seven games. Well, Darcy Kemper has been maybe the most impressive or among the most impressive goaltenders since the restart. Was very impressive against Nashville in the qualifying round, and it's something that we got to keep our eye on. He mentioned Taylor Hall. He's a former MVP. That's a name that we should know before we start here. He's a former first overall pick, three-time All-Star, Hart Memorial Trophy winner, first ever Devils player to win that. Gets traded to the Coyotes, so we'll see if they can slow him down. But here's one other thing to keep an eye on before the playoffs start here for the Avs in just about 3.5 hours is the Nazem Kadri redemption. For the last two postseasons, Stoke, for the last two postseasons, Kadri has been suspended for multiple games in series that Toronto ended up losing in seven games. He was one of the best players they had. They traded him to the Avs, so an opportunity to redeem himself in the postseason. I think that's a storyline that we should be watching as well.
Can't wait.
All right, Stoke, the voice of college football, weighed in on the debate to play or not to play, and he made a seriously compelling case for one side. I'll tell you who said what next. Obviously, a major story in all of sports yesterday took place while we were on the air when the Pac-12 canceled their football season. The Big Ten is trying to suspend their season and move it to the spring. It's a massive, massive sports story, and we still are not sure what is going to happen with the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12.
I thought the Big 12 said they're playing.
Did that come out this morning?
I saw a little something like that.
Yes.
I believe that came out. They said, I think I saw.
No, they did. Because Steven sent me, and I'm trying to find the actual tweet here. But here we go. Bruce Feldman tweeted out, and Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports, he tweeted out, for Big 12 teams, their schedule is expected to open up with a non-conference opponent that would either be on September 12th or September 19th. The conference schedule will begin September 26th. Formal announcement will happen in a few hours.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Let's play ball.
Do we have these Joel Klatt? Okay, great.
Real quick, because we talked a lot about this yesterday, and we talked about certain schools that wanted to continue to play and didn't like what their conference came up with. You know, when you look at the Big Ten and Nebraska,
yep,
Michigan,
yep,
and, you know, Nebraska said they were exploring options to play. Well, the Big Ten commissioner said they ain't happening. If they want to be part of this conference, they're not playing this year.
Is that right?
That's right.
I did not see that.
Yes. So they asked him about it, and he said, no, not. They can't. Nebraska can't play and be a member of the Big Ten Conference. So.
Wow.
There you go.
Okay, so they're really putting their foot down here. They're putting their foot down, and I'm trying to imagine what financial handcuffs that they could have on Nebraska. Like, would they break the Big Ten TV deal if they participated in another conference's TV deal? Something like that.
Yeah, no, I just think that, you know, when a conference makes a ruling like this, you know, everybody's got to abide by it. If not, then, you know, then why even have a conference if teams can do whatever they want to do? why even have the structure and why even have a conference if you're going to allow certain teams to just go do what they want to do? I mean, you got to put yourself in their situation.
Right.
Like, we can't let Michigan, Ohio State, Nebraska go off and why these, you know, Minnesota or whoever, all these other teams can't play Iowa and they can't do it.
I would have to believe that they'd be contractually just totally locked up. Like if say lightning struck our tower that our a signal is on, and the fan was off the air for a week, and we all wanted to be on the radio, I don't think we'd be able to just hop on another station.
No,
I know I'm like very boiling it down to a super
that's pretty much
simplistic
what it is.
Analogy.
That's what it is, right? So you can understand the Big Ten commissioner saying, no, we're not letting our schools go play in the SEC.
Right.
Just certain schools that want to play. No, this is the ruling. This is what you got to abide by if you want to be a part of this conference. So that's what, you know, I saw today.
Is something like that the first step in damaged relationships between universities and the conferences that leads to a breakup? We've seen conference alignment. It just happened in the last 10, 12 years.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Joe Klatt, who, you know, Colin Coward calls the voice of college football. He is, you know, really carved out an incredible niche for himself. The A-team there calls all the big games, right? So he put out a video. First of all, he put out a tweet that caught a lot of traction about how he believes that there's more benefits to college football playing ball than there is the downside of different factors that maybe we're not aware of if they didn't play. And that got a ton of reaction on social media. And he put out a video clarifying what he wanted to truly say. And it's really, really interesting audio. We have four different cuts here. I will warn our audience, they are a little bit on the lengthy side. Steven did a good job with trimming them down best he could. But this is a four-pronged approach why Joel Klatt believes, and I should set this up before we play this first piece of audio. He began the video talking about how he understands how serious the virus is. He is not dismissive of the virus. He is taking it very, very seriously, as it should be, but is isolating this conversation astutely to just college football. All right, so we'll play this first cut. First and foremost, Joel Klatt believes that all players should be able to opt out.
Those that want to opt out should be able to opt out, and they should be able to do so without fear of losing their scholarship. I think that that's very clear. There are kids that have compromised immune systems. Maybe they have family members with compromised immune systems. They need to be able to make that choice without fear of retribution, and their scholarship should be honored, and it will be honored. And in almost every single case that I have heard of, at least, it is being honored. Now, there is a caveat. If you do opt out, I do believe that you should be forced to opt out wholly, right? You should not be around the team, because if it is that dangerous for you to be around the team and be around anybody, even within the testing protocols and procedures, you should probably be in close to isolation. So I don't think that you should be allowed to be around the team, involved in team activities of any sort. And that even means, you know, school activities and things like tutoring.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I agree with him there. You know, if you want to opt out, but you can't just be, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You got to opt out. You got to get away from your team. You can't be doing anything with your teammates. So if you have serious situations that you need to opt out for, well, then you need to take this thing seriously then.
Yeah.
And you can't
and don't go half and half.
Right. You can't have that.
Yeah. And I agree with that, too. But I also wholeheartedly agree with the front portion of his statement that it is a player's right to opt out. If he has, you know, concerns, or if there's, you know, these at-risk factors that are prevalent in whoever's life and they want to opt out, they should not be having their scholarship pulled. Their scholarship should still be honored by the football team. I agree with that.
Yes, I do too.
Okay. This is more from Joel Klatt laying out his argument why he believes that these college football players would actually be safer if they play. Check out this next piece of audio.
I think players will be way better off and way healthier, and this is maybe the most important one, within the structure of football than outside of the structure of football. Listen, when you're in a community of testing and tracking and protocols and procedures with medical and healthcare right at your fingertips, with nutritional and diet needs right at your fingertips, with social distancing guidelines, mask wearing, so on and so forth, academic structure and accountability in all those areas, that is a safer bubble, if you want to call it that, than being out in the normal fray of everyday life. There's no doubt in my mind that being on campus within the structure of football and even playing the sport of football, these players will be much safer than if they were just told, hey, the season is canceled, go on your way.
Yeah, agree again. I mean, we talked about that in the past week. Once Jim Harbaugh came out with his comments, that he's exactly right. When you have the structure of a football team with doctors and everything that protocols in place, guys are going to abide by and take care of themselves and do the things that they're supposed to do at a lot higher rate than they would if they just go out and just go back home.
Right.
And not have the structure of football and your medical personnel there and testing and all
the resources.
Things, the resources. It's so agree again.
Yeah, I find myself agreeing as well that all the protocols that these universities will have in place will keep the players actually safer. Now, I know on its face, the idea of players crashing together is like, well, you can spread the virus so easily. But ideally, given all the testing and the guidelines that they're going about, the players crashing together are healthy players. So it's very interesting. Here's more from Joel Klatt. And maybe this may have resonated with me the most when I was listening to this morning. This is the effect of the human impact.
It's the human impact of a cancellation. I think it's been well documented across the spectrum that people have been dealing with suicide and depression at a far greater rate during the COVID lockdowns in the last 5 months than they were before. The hotlines have been inundated during this pandemic, and that's a problem. The mental health of players, I think, needs to be considered. It would be naive to think that we wouldn't see a dramatic rise in depression and the overall deterioration of mental health of these college football players, many of whom have been singularly focused on their sport and their achievement in their sport, maybe their entire lives. And to take that away from them at this point, I think would be very detrimental to their mental health. And let's not forget that this age group specifically struggles with mental health, maybe to a far greater degree than other age groups. And we know this because the second leading cause of death amongst college age kids in America is suicide. That's a sobering fact that we need to be aware of when we're talking about taking something away as important as college football from these college football players.
And he went on to say, and it was not included in that cut, but he went on to talk about, if you take away the most important thing to these kids, you're going to see substance abuse skyrocket.
Yeah.
And substance abuse during this pandemic has been like threefold. And I think that is a real talking point that should be addressed when we have this big conversation.
Absolutely. And we talked about it yesterday. The mental makeup of these young men and how it's going to affect them. It's real. And so I agree with them once again. You know, you take something like football sports away from these young men and women, and that's, you know, what it could do to them and what they're going through. And, yes, it's a serious, serious issue. I think that is overlooked in all of these things that we're talking about. And that's not brought up enough and not talked about enough.
And here's
but it's real.
It is real. It is real. And here's the final piece of audio that we'll play from you from Joel Klatt, talking about the overall financial repercussions if football is not played.
And the last factor that I would point to is the financial impact. And it's a significant one. And it's not one that I'm talking about lining people's pockets. I think it's about the fact that you're going to lose potentially thousands, tens of thousands of scholarship opportunities across intercollegiate athletics. Intercollegiate athletics right now provide about 150,000 scholarship opportunities to higher education based on athletic excellence and achievement. And this would be a devastating blow to boys and girls across the country to continue their education. And in many cases, this is their only way to get that higher education, in particular when you look at the extreme cost of higher learning. And some of these universities, that financial impact is dramatic.
We spoke about this a little bit yesterday on the way out as well, that it is, this is actually bigger than football. Whether you're talking about a town like Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who the mayor says if they don't have Alabama football, it would be financially catastrophic to their university or to their community, to the conversations of, oh, the entire swimming and diving team, yeah, you no longer are on full scholarship. Water polo, your sport no longer exists here. Men's and women's volleyball, I'm sorry, the programs are shut down.
Yep.
The ripple effect financially from this could be catastrophic to tens of thousands of student athletes.
Yes, it's not just football. It's the other sports that will be impacted mostly. And we have seen colleges already have to take away second-tier sport.
Yeah,
because of the lack of revenue coming in from football and the loss of revenue. And so you're going to continue to see more and more of it as football gets taken away from these schools, and it's just the way it's going to be. So I think Joel Klatt, you know, is spot on with everything that he said. And, you know, for me, thinking about the mental makeup and how that's going to affect college kids, you know, you look at what could happen if they went forward with playing football. And, you know, could some of these players possibly lose their life? Right? And that would be the headlines everywhere.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
But what's going to happen now when football's taken away from them, or these sports are taken away from them? You know, will we see an uptick in suicide from some of these athletes? So
I think that's a factor. And I think more common, and I'm not trying to move on from what you just said, but I think more common is you'll see massive substance abuse.
That too, yes.
Stoke, I'm going to tell you something right now, and I've never said this publicly. The summer after I was done with basketball, my life was just basketball, basketball, basketball. Put one foot in front of the other. You know, whether you're talking about weight room or conditioning or playing or training. When I got done after hoops was done, I was lost, man. I wake up and just start smoking weed, like first thing in the morning. And, you know, obviously. Yes. Obviously, that's not a point of pride for me.
Do we go to commercial?
That's not a point of pride for me, but I'm being real with you. I'm being real with you. When you took away my thing that was my life, I was a little bit lost, man.
And the structure that you have.
Yes.
You have a structure. You have structure. You got to wake up. Got to go do this. Got to go do that. All of a sudden, you take that away. What's your purpose? You lose your purpose. And, you know, it was hard enough, but you knew kind of when the end was coming.
Yeah.
Right? I knew, you know, my college career was going to be ending for the most part. And so, but yes, it's tough when it's just taken away from you and you don't have that structure anymore. It's like, okay, I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go work out. I'm just going to what am I going to do? I don't know. I'm going to go hang out.
And guys, they're going to get in trouble.
Right.
They're going to get involved in stuff that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Absolutely.
And going back to the health standpoint, and this is, again, I've thought about this a lot. Understanding the protocols that these guys have in place, going back to COVID, I just don't think they're in a safer space for COVID. I just isolated to that. I don't think they're in a safer space not being a part of these super strict protocols. I just don't find that to be true.
No.
So, like, when I read Jim Harbaugh and the strict rules that they are abiding by to the point where they have zero positive tests in hundreds of tests, I'm very encouraged by that. That makes me feel good. These guys are trying to be buttoned up and trying to be safe. So this is not about, like, I want to see college football one way or the other because, damn it, I love watching kids play football. That's not my stance here. This is after much consideration that I'm sharing this into a microphone.
Yeah, I think when you look at the pros and cons here, I think when I get all the information for me and I hear, you know, Joel Klatt, Jim Harbaugh, and you hear their reasoning, and I tend to agree with pretty much everything that they say.
It seems reasonable. It's not like from a point of passion.
Right, right. their substance, their facts behind what they're saying. And I agree. I agree with pretty much everything that they're saying. I think that when you take a step back, I realize why some of these conferences are canceling. You know, Pac-12 and Big Ten are canceling their season. You know, you look at liability issues.
Sure.
You just don't want to put kids in those situations. But I think when you take a step back and you look at the pros and cons here, and I think there's more pros by going out and playing when I hear all the facts. For these young men, not for me to watch college football like you're saying, but for these young men and for their institutions, I think there's more pros than cons.
I find myself on that side of it too. And this is not a perfect uniform conversation. This is a really hard conversation. You know, I saw Bill Connolly of ESPN refer to this as what's known in social sciences as a wicked problem, which is coined by some super smart University of Cal professor. But it's a unique problem that has no right answers. So, like the way to attack a quote unquote wicked problem, it's not going to be perfect. So it's not a perfect conversation. And here's the other thing. I respect the other side of the argument. I do. I respect it. I'm not dismissive of it. I take it into consideration. This is a big one, boy. This is a big one.
It's tough. There's no game plan for it. You know, we've never been in anything like this before. And so trying to navigate it, you're going to have differences of opinions and differences of how to move forward. And you know, that's just where we're at right now. And like you said, you respect everybody's opinion. But I think when I get all the facts for myself, I look at it and I say, I tend to agree with, I think, for these college athletes playing and going ahead with football probably would be better than not.
And Joel Klatt went on to say on Colin Cowherd's show yesterday that he has reached out to seven universities, seven Division I university head coaches. Seven for seven, the coaches want to play. But the coaches relayed to them that they've taken straw polls within their football programs. And he said, on average, about 9 out of every 10 players want to play.
Yeah.
So
I could see that. I think most college players would want to play. I know I have a high school son. He wants to play. He would want to play.
Yeah.
And you know, they've been playing baseball. They've been playing baseball. I mean, it's not football. They've been playing baseball. So they're in the dugouts and you know all that stuff. They've been playing. So I guarantee you that most college athletes. I asked you that. You said yes. I know I would want to. And you know they live in the world where they only have a few years left to play. And you take one of those away, those things are precious. And you look at the potential, what could happen, and I think most guys would be willing to take that risk.
I think so, too. I think so, too. And this is with, again, this conversation being handled with a high level of respect to what COVID-19 has done to this country and the opposing viewpoint for maybe someone who disagrees with us.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's
I mean, we've seen it. We've been it. We're going through it. And so everybody, like you said, everybody has differences of opinions here. But I just try to get all the facts and then form my opinion. But I do think when you hear these guys talk, it's like, okay, I see where they're coming from.
Yeah. Yep, me too. Me too. Training Camp 2020 Locked and Loaded. We'll be breaking it all down thanks to our friends at Pro Green Denver Synthetic Turf Systems. Check out all of our training camp content at 1043thefan.com/camp. We're going to be out at camp starting
we're
here.
We're camping.
Yeah, we're camping starting here next week. Cannot wait to be a part of that and deliver that unique information to our audience here. All right, Stoke, ESPN went through and ranked each NFL team's under 25 talent. They do this every year, all right? Under 25 talent. Where do the Broncos end up on that list? We'll tell you next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.